Jim, let me ask you a question about the media, which is going to allow you to talk a little bit about this documentary again that you said. Darn it, I got to ask you this. But it's important to the whole scheme of things.
Yeah.
Would you have been a little more comfortable with what you saw tonight had they come to their own conclusions? Because, I mean, the fact that they didn't agree with your theory is not the issue here. But would you have felt a little more comfortable had they presented all the sides in the specific case?
Oh, of course, George. This was massive. What's known in philosophy as begging the question. It's taking for granted what you're arguing for. In other words, they took the Warren Commission report as a premise and then derived from it the conclusions that were drawn in the Warren report. It was a trivial exercise from a logical point of view. And then this animation, you see, anytime you see drawings and relied upon instead of actual photographs, you got to be suspicious. The Warren report relied upon drawings of the wounds. The fellow, Rydberg, who drew the diagrams that were supposed to show Jack Kennedy's wounds, wasn't even allowed to see the body, George. And here you have an animation that was virtually juvenile in its characteristics. I mean, I was shocked to see the mediocre quality of what was supposed to be a superb animation by this fellow Dale Myers, who obviously doesn't know enough about the case to even do a faithful rendition of the motorcade as it took its route up Houston and turned on to Elm, as I mentioned in the beginning, because he swung out too widely, nearly hit this concrete abutment. We have a vivid statement from Roy Truly, who talks about how then he tried to get back on the center, and when he got down a little ways after bullets began to be fired, he pulled to the left and stopped. Roy Truly had an especially clear statement about that. But we have 59 other witnesses who report the limousine either slowing dramatically or coming to a complete halt. Now, when you think how busy people are, some saw it slow, others saw it come to the halt, but it had to slow dramatically as it came to a complete halt. And in fact, it stopped so abruptly it actually jostled the passengers, according to those who have actually seen the film one of the films that was taken there, because several were taken, George, that were used in bits and pieces to create the film we have available today. So, I mean, I've got a whole book here, right, that's devoted to the Zapruder film hoax. Well, the point is, you had here tonight a one-sided hoax that was based upon a hoax of a film. So mm-hmm, it was doubly mm-hmm. duplicitous. It was really shocking. I mean, that's why I'm so fired up about it.
I thought the History Channel did a relatively good job this week with its series, don't you?
George, yes, absolutely. And of course, you know, I mean, the first segment was reporting the work of the people with whom I've been associated in publishing all these books. I mean, you had David Maddock, MD, PhD, who's discovered the autopsy x-rays have been fabricated and had done stereographic work on the photographs and discovered that they had blacked in the back of the head on some of those photographs to conceal the massive blowout to the back of the head. Gary Aguilar, a leading medical expert who's been studying the similarities and differences between the descriptions of the wounds at Bethesda and at Parkland. Doug Weldon, who's the foremost authority on the Lincoln limousine, who not only has followed all the evidence of the shot to the throat that actually passed through the windshield, but actually traced the limousine back to Ford Motor Company, where it was completely rebuilt on Monday, and found the official working for Ford who replaced the windshield, who confirmed that through and through bullet hole existed. Bob Livingston, world authority on the human brain. I was so thrilled that Nigel Turner had this footage of Bob Livingston. He was the scientific director of the National Institute for Mental Health and the National Institute for Neurological Diseases and Blindness in both the Eisenhower and Kennedy administrations, George. He is the most distinguished American I've ever known. He was a world authority on the human brain, but also an expert on wound ballistics, having supervised an emergency medical hospital for Okinawans and injured Japanese prisoners of war during the Battle of Okinawa. Now, when he came into government, George, his qualifications were so great they had to create a new civil service rank. He worked at the National Institutes for Health across the street from Bethesda Naval Hospital. When he heard reports, and there were reports of two shots, two wounds, widely broadcast on radio and television that day. One was a small wound to the throat. The other was this massive blowout to the back of the head. He knew that small wound to the throat had to be an entrance wound. So when he got back to his home in Maryland, he called over to Bethesda Naval Hospital, and the officer of the deck put him in contact with Commander Humes, who was awaiting the body to perform the autopsy. And Bob Livingston explained to Humes that this neck wound obviously had to be a wound of entry, and therefore the neck had to be dissected very carefully, because if there were wounds from the back, this is ironic, if there were wounds from the back as well as these wounds from the front, then there had to have been at least two shooters and therefore a conspiracy. Humes acknowledged this, but they were also cut off by the FBI that wouldn't let him talk about it any longer. The next day, the physicians would insist that they had no knowledge of this wound to the throat and therefore had not performed a dissection of the neck, which they ought to have done. And, of course, they went ahead to fancifully infer that a wound to the back was presumably the wound of entrance and the wound to the neck was presumably a wound of exit. But actually, the wound to the neck at this point, George, looked very different than it had at Parkland. At Parkland, it was just a small hole with a straight, clean incision. By the time it got to Bethesda, it had become this kind of melon slice, very jagged. And as you picked up, you know, from the Men Who Killed Kennedy segments on the History Channel, Nigel may have tracked down evidence as to who may have altered that neck wound to make it look more like it would have looked as an exit wound. In fact, Bob Livingston got a call that afternoon to ask what would it look like if it were an exit wound rather than an entrance wound, and he described the difference, and that may have been used as the guideline for this guy, this masterful mortician, who was experienced with a scalpel to reconfigure the wound. You know, his wife and daughter explained, his wife in particular, that when he got back from disappearing to do something connected, she thought, with the assassination, he told them they had to leave town and they had to pack up immediately and leave town. And it was only after he watched on Sunday Jack Ruby shooting down Lee Oswald that he then relaxed and said to them both, he said, "Okay, we can go home now."